If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
According to the latest poll numbers, President Biden's approval rating is 38%, which is the lowest it's been since taking office. Well, come on, America. What do you want him to do? Something?
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with Jason Sudeikis, Brendan Hunt, and Joe Kelly, co-creators of Ted Lasso. But first, a closer look.
The Senate report provides damning new details about Donald Trump's attempts to get the Justice Department to overturn the election, and yet former Trump allies who criticized him for the attempted coup, like Nikki Haley and Mike Pence, are pathetically falling back in line. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. If you recall, and I know it's hard to remember since it happened approximately 78 years ago, Donald Trump whipped up a violent mob to attack the Capitol and stage an insurrection in order to overturn the results of a free and fair election. I'm no lawyer, but that alone seems to me like a crime worthy of jail time. And by the way, when I say I'm not a lawyer, that doesn't mean I don't know lawyers. I feel like everyone I know is a lawyer. The other day, I was at the dentist's office getting a cleaning, and when I mentioned a parking ticket, my hygienist said, "Do you need representation?" and gave me his card. Although I should be clear, my dental hygienist is Rudy Giuliani. I'm sorry, he's just cheaper. I think it's because he uses helium instead of nitrous. I say that because it always hurts a ton, and when I scream in pain, it sounds like this.
Oh!
And yet it seems like not only is Trump likely to avoid jail, but according to a report from earlier this week, he wants to run for president again.
New reporting on Donald Trump's future presidential ambitions. Three sources tell The Washington Post that Trump asked advisors whether he should announce his 2024 bid for the White House after the chaotic exit in Afghanistan. And those advisors, quote, urged patience. That's the quote, patience. But behind the scenes, there's concern that Democrats could benefit during the 2022 midterms if Trump decides to jump into the presidential race before that.
It says a lot about how unpopular Trump is that his advisors had to tell him to wait to announce his candidacy or it would help Democrats. But would anyone really be shocked if he ran again? He tried everything in and out of his power to stay in the White House, even though he lost. He begged the Georgia Secretary of State to find some votes, like he was Jack Lemmon in a phone booth. Assuming he's not going to run again is like hitting Michael Myers with a car and thinking the movie's over. Oh, he fell down. Okay, we're all safe now. We can turn our backs on him. Trump probably understands the place he'd be safest from his current legal troubles is the White House, so it makes sense he'd want to get back there. He treats the job less like a massive responsibility and more like a safe base in a game of middle school tag. I'm touching the Oval Office wall. I'm safe when I'm touching the wall. You can't arrest me. I'm touching the wall. So Trump is reportedly considering running again, and other aspiring Republicans have said they'll wait until he makes the decision before they decide to run themselves.
Former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley now says the Republican Party needs former President Trump, and she'll consult with him if she makes a bid for the White House.
She called Donald Trump a friend and said she would consult with him before launching a run for the White House. We need him in the Republican Party. I don't want us to go back to the days before Trump.
You don't? What was wrong with the days before Trump? Too many alive people? Not enough breaking news alerts? There was so much insanity during Trump that the breaking news banner was seared into my flat screen even when it was off. But that tells you everything right there. They want the Trump years back again. That's what happens when you're a boring, soulless hack who's dedicated your life to pursuing power above all else in a place like official Washington, where everyone around you is a balding weirdo with no interest aside from raising money and running for things or maybe writing one of these airport terminal dust catchers. The Nikki Haley's of the world used to spend their time at boring think tank cocktail parties where the hot topic was who's getting invited to the Heritage Foundation Christmas party. Then suddenly, an amoral reality show psycho like Trump comes along and uses dirty words, and they think they're in Hollywood now. It's like when you go to Times Square for the first time and think you're meeting the real Iron Man. He said he was going to use his jet boots to fly away, but then I saw him smoking a cigarette on the F train. That's what happened to Lindsey Graham. He started out hating Trump, like Trump was a slick out-of-towner dating his meemaw. But then Graham realized he could be in show business, and everything changed. Meemaw, Mr. Trump says he's going to get me a job in the pictures. I just need to give him $200 for new headshots. What do you mean, how am I going to get $200? We're going to sell the farm, you old coot. That's why Nikki Haley wants Trump days back and why she suddenly considers Trump her friend again after telling Politico earlier this year that he was no longer welcome in national politics. I think he's going to find himself further and further isolated. I don't think he's going to be in the picture. I don't think he can. He's fallen so far. We need to acknowledge he let us down. He went down a path he shouldn't have, and we shouldn't have followed him. We shouldn't have listened to him, and we can't let that ever happen again. Let's be honest. These people were always going to forgive him. Republicans are like the rich housewife who finds lipstick on her husband's collar and tells her friend, he says he got it because he slipped and fell into a makeup counter. And you know, the floor at Bloomingdale's is like an ice skating rink. So the Nikki Haley's and Lindsey Graham's of the world briefly distanced themselves from Trump and then quickly fell back in line, despite the fact that he repeatedly tried to overturn the results of a free and fair election and destroy our democracy. And it isn't like January 6th was just some protest that got out of hand after an impulsive Trump vented his frustrations. They had a plan. In fact, they had multiple plans, as we've explained before. And one of Trump's lawyers, a guy named John Eastman, even wrote an instruction manual for Mike Pence laying out exactly how to overturn the election results, which he did not have the power to do. And Trump even brought them together in the Oval Office to try to convince Pence to go through with it.
Stunning new details on Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election from the new book Peril by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. The authors report on a two-page memo drafted by John Eastman. John Eastman is a conservative lawyer who was working for Trump's legal team. It amounts to a blueprint for a coup. NBC News has later obtained the memo. It outlines how Pence was to have disrupted the certification of the Electoral College results and handed the election to Trump. Trump tells Pence this about Eastman, quote, you really need to listen to John. He's a respected constitutional scholar. Hear him out. Listen to John.
But even weirder are the juvenile tactics Trump used to try to persuade Pence to go through with it. If these people say you had the power, wouldn't you want to? Trump asked. I wouldn't want any one person to have that authority, Pence responded. But wouldn't it almost be cool to have that power, Trump asked. You don't understand, Mike, Trump said. You can do this. I don't want to be your friend anymore if you don't do this. The following day, on the morning of January 6th, he reportedly called Pence and taunted, if you don't do it, I picked the wrong man 4 years ago, adding, you're going to wimp out. So he used the same tactics as a 14-year-old trying to convince his friend to steal a Kit Kat from a convenience store. Just hide it under your shirt. I can't do that. But wouldn't it be, like, cool if you did? I don't know if I can be friends with a wimp, Mike. Also, I love that Trump was the most powerful man in the world with virtually unlimited resources at his fingertips, and yet he thought his biggest leverage was threatening not to be Mike Pence's friend anymore. You're a terrible friend. I doubt Mike Pence was thinking, oh, no, now who's going to help me with my sofa next time I have to move? Also, we know about all this. Can you imagine what we don't know about? So far, Bob Woodward's Trump books have been called Fear, Rage, and Peril, but at this rate, he's going to have to call the next one, get a load of this guy. Yet Pence is now doing the same song and dance as Nikki Haley and acting like that whole mob riot thing was no big deal.
The president and I sat down a few days later and talked through all of it. I can tell you that we parted amicably at the end of the administration, and we've talked a number of times since we both left office. But I believe that our entire focus today should be on the future. I know the media wants to distract from the Biden administration's failed agenda by focusing on one day in January.
One day in January? There was a day where a violent mob was chanting, hang Seth Meyers. I wouldn't call it one day in January. I'd call it the day I moved to Portugal and grew a beard. One Day in January makes it sound like a sports movie starring Al Pacino as a past his prime football coach. Boom! All right, let's pick a play. We got a passing play. We got running plays. Or how about this? We just hang the opposing quarterback. That's hard-nosed football, muchacho. Last day to do my Pacino. Oh, I meant last day to do my Pacino without a standing ovation. And that wasn't the only Oval Office meeting where Trump tried to pressure a senior government official to help him overthrow democracy. We also know that one of his henchmen in the Justice Department, a guy named Jeffrey Clark, had a detailed plan for getting the Justice Department to interfere and declare there was fraud in the election, which there was not. And now, thanks to a new report from the Senate Judiciary Committee, we have more details about that plan and that meeting.
After an eight-month investigation, the Senate Judiciary Committee today will release a report on how the Trump administration attempted to subvert the law in an effort to keep the president in office. The report provides new details on the efforts of then-acting Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Clark as he attempted to do the bidding of President Trump.
The President of the United States decided to put full court pressure on the new acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen. And as I said before, he was relentless. When you look at the number of contacts, we're still waiting for even more evidence to come in on that subject. He was really pushing the Department of Justice to bend to his political will. And I will tell you, I don't think I'm overstating the case. We were a half step away from a full-blown constitutional crisis.
Now, of course, half a step is still a lot for Trump, given how he takes steps. I've never seen a person as confident as him walk as gingerly as he does. He walks down a ramp like a deer on a frozen pond. If you couldn't see his shoes, you'd think he was wearing roller skates for the first time. But that's how close we came. Trump tried every avenue he could think of, the courts, the states, the vice president, the Justice Department. He's like the guy in gridlock traffic who keeps switching lanes and then throws his hand up when it doesn't work. We're on the FDR at 5 in the afternoon. There's no secret way out, buddy. In the end, the only thing that stopped Trump apparently was a threat from senior DOJ officials to resign. As the New York Times reported yesterday, just days before the insurrection, Trump held a meeting in the Oval Office about his plans for a coup. On the agenda was Trump's desire to install a loyalist as acting attorney general to carry out his demands for more aggressive investigations into his unfounded claims of election fraud. On the other side were the top leaders of the Justice Department who warned Trump that they and other senior officials would resign en masse. If he followed through, they received immediate support from another key participant, Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel. Trump's proposed plan, Cipollone argued, would be a murder-suicide pact. Pretty dramatic language. Woodward's going to have to up the ante on that next book even more than I thought. Although murder-suicide pact probably sounded good to Trump when he first heard it.
So I murder you and then you commit suicide? I think I saw something like that once on SVU. SVU! We love SVU, don't we, folks? A great American program. We love Mr. Ice Lemonade and Richard Seltzer, a real original. Detective John Munch! Richard Seltzer started as a comedian. People don't know that. But I remember I saw him in 1983 at Catch a Rising Star. Nice guy, good guy, hated my guts.
The GOP has fallen back in line behind a guy who did everything he could to overthrow democracy and absolutely will try again if given the chance, a chance he apparently very much wants. The details in this Senate report are damning, and there are almost certainly more to come. There's enough material in here, for ESPN. Wow, this is a real tee-up. I don't know where this is going. You guys, I never know what the last clip's going to be. That's something, you know, we're just going to share it. You know, this is our last night without an audience. Let's just talk to the people at home and let them inside, behind the curtain, so to speak. There's enough material here for ESPN to do a four-part 30 for 30 and call it...
One Day in January.
This has been a closer look.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Our guest tonight is an Emmy Award-winning actor, writer, and co-creator of the hit series Ted Lasso. The season 2 finale premieres Friday on Apple TV+. He'll also be making his return to Saturday Night Live, this time as host, with musical guest Brandi Carlile on October 23rd. Please welcome back to the show our very good friend Jason Sudeikis. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Seth.
It's so good to see you.
Nice to see you, too. This doesn't... It feels like... can't believe this is on television.
Yeah, right? It seems like very shaggy for a network television show.
Hey.
But that's look, the standards are, they're just dropping by the day, my friend.
It's fantastic. It's great. And then it'll all come back around. It's fine. Yep.
Now, I will say, one of the nice things about this year's Emmy, not just the fact that you guys won so many deserved awards, but it did kind of feel like a party again after a year where it sort of had a maybe a funereal vibe. Yeah. And you looked like $1 million, my friend. I mean,
I was happy
to see you win, but I was even happier to see you in this tuxedo. You got some real good feedback.
I mean, yeah. I mean, starting right there with Kate Winslet, she walked by me at some point and just, like, rubbed my shoulder. And I didn't know if it was me or the couch I was wearing or what it was. But whatever worked,
I mean, this photo just, this grabs a moment where a woman is just turning to go, like, bugga what?
I'll take your word for it. Yeah, I hadn't seen that photo. I remember that moment happening from the first-person perspective, but that lets me know that I was right. It really did happen.
We had your wonderful co-star and fellow writer on the show, Brett Goldstein, here last night. He was talking about, it was the first time he'd been in an Emmys and how much dread he had when the music started and there was an expectation of dancing. You were a little bit more familiar with what a room like this would be like. You're a man who's not afraid to dance. But were you aware of how much you'd be on camera over the course of the evening?
Absolutely not. No, when we got there, like, our table was front and center, it was in the round, but we were, like, right there, and then my seat was literally right up in front, which has never been my move. I'm much more of a back of the classroom, whispering, passing notes, doing shenanigans, and to be, it felt, a little bit like I was, mayor for a little bit, or, like, some sort of, where they usually put royalty. And so, even the fact that I had to, I joked around, I was sitting at the table, and the stage was behind me. And I was like, what if I just sat like this the whole time and just like, and didn't even turn around? Just ate my little box of food. But yeah, we had no idea. I mean, Brett's already reticent because he's, British and a writer. But then to ask him to be at his first fancy thing like that. Because all these other ones we've been doing in this setting.
Yeah.
We open up laptops and now here we are around a bunch of, fancy folks and they want us to dance right away. And Rita Wilson set the bar, and too high, in my opinion.
Too high. It's going to be a very hard bar for the rest of us to meet, not just for the next year's Emmys, but I think for all in the future.
Yeah, indeed. Yep.
You, I want to ask about what must be very nice for you is the feedback, not just from fellow actors and fellow comedians, but so many in the world of sports are huge fans of Ted Lasso. Ted heads, I believe, is the terminology. What are the coaches that you've been lucky enough to talk to about your show?
Well, I mean, early on, with Jim Harbaugh, he was helpful. I mean, I actually reached out to him because I met him, years ago when he helped us out on Detroiters, the show that, that Sam and Tim did with Joe and Zach. And we've stayed in touch and asking him, hey, what do you wear on game days? Like, do you show up? Do you bring like a little duffel bag? And he's like, no, I just show up in khakis and a sweatshirt. I was like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. So, I feel like there's part of him that feels ownership over the character. But, he's heard back from him. But then like some really fun ones, being a basketball fan, but Steve Nash and Steve Kerr. Steve's son, Matthew, actually was one of our writer's assistants last year. And this season we had that we name checked him in the same episode, our little homage to that father and son duo. But we also heard, Jurgen Klopp was like a big fan, the Liverpool coach.
That's a fan. The coaches who have engaged with it are exactly the coaches you want to have engaged with it. And
100%.
That must just be the best.
Oh, and especially when, you know, like Steve Nash is a huge, you know, fan of soccer and knows the game really, really well. He really liked the commercials too. So he's been a fan for a spell, but then when you have people from the soccer / football community embrace it, like, you know, Thierry Henry or, who else? I just met Abby Wambach, and she, you know, her and her wife Glennon, or girlfriend, I don't know their relationship status, but they were holding hands. You know, scuttlebutt, you heard it from me. Right? I don't care. I'll put anybody on blast. Yeah. Together. Ladies, too. I mean, there you go.
You're in the public eye. If people want to hold hands around you, that just goes out to the public.
That's right.
You have the eye of the public.
But the fact that, like, Abby, you know, gave Glennon told me that she gave a standing ovation when we won. I was like, that's great. And so that's great when we're even, you know, pulling the wool over, you know, actual footballers' eyes.
You gave a nice shout out to our former boss, I guess my current boss, who am I kidding? Lorne Michaels. You got out. I'm still here. But it was
not in 2 weeks. He brought me right back.
He did. That's true. Have you heard from Lauren since you? I mean, I guess you're talking about the fact you're going back to host. So you must have heard from him.
I saw him after that night. But yeah, man, I didn't know. That was a fun thing. Like Bill Lawrence, you know, who does the show with us, was like, when you looked over there and gestured to him, did you know he wasn't there? I go, no. That was real time. Like I brain farted a few people that I wanted to thank because I riffed on him not being there. Which I was like, well, we'll make some toilet humor and, you know, make my folks proud and you know, move on. But yeah, you know, after that, he gave some pearls of wisdom and then, you know, was just excited about, you know, we hadn't announced who the hosts were coming up. So, you know, he was playing it cool there.
Was one of his pearls of wisdom, don't go to the bathroom when one of your former castmates is likely to win an Emmy?
I mean, yeah, you know, 2021 hindsight.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, he's always learning. You know, he's constantly learning. He's a work in progress. He'll tell you that first and foremost.
That is Lord. He's always like, I'm not there, Jason.
I got so much to learn.
He always says, he goes, I don't come into work because I know who I am. I come into work because it's 11:30. Hey, I've seen the trailer. I'm very excited about this film that I believe is out on Friday, South of Heaven.
Yeah.
Very not Ted Lasso. It must be fun to sort of do something noirish. Yeah. I feel like I haven't seen you do that before.
I know. No, I mean, I you know, it's not really a spoiler just because I won't tell you when I do it or who I do it towards, but I shoot a shotgun in this movie.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's like, but no, it's crazy. Yeah, it's me and Evangeline Lilly, a bunch of other folks. But yeah, it's like in that style of like 70s noir, like, you know, when Walter Matthau would play like a badass in the movies in the 70s, and it's kind of like, yeah, I'm looking forward for folks to see it. It is very different than Ted Lasso, even though I have like a Southern accent in it. But yeah, there's no soccer and there's you know, not as much hugging and forgiveness.
Yeah, less rewarding arcs. I'm guessing the arcs are less rewarding. I'm going to come right back. I'm going to talk to you and Joe and Brendan. We'll be right back with all of them right after this. Welcome back to Late Night. We're here with Jason Sudeikis, along with co-creators Brendan Hunt and Joe Kelly. Look at that. Wow. Well rehearsed, gentlemen. Well rehearsed.
Not bad.
This is very exciting. You are now rolling right out of season two, which we're getting to see the finale of this week, into writing season three. How's it going so far?
I mean, what week are we on? Four?
At least. Yeah.
At least four. I mean, the first 2 weeks were great because it was the lead up to the Emmys, and then we won stuff at the Emmys. And we really just, it was a lot of high-fiving. and now we have to actually write.
Took the next day off. That passes the day.
Yeah, that's true. So we're figuring it out now. I don't want to say we're getting
right above you, Joker, is a car. As a, like, it looks like an idea for episode 302.
Yeah.
Which one? What do you got there?
Ted dies.
Yeah, Ted dies.
You know. No wrong answers while you're blue sky in a season.
Blue sky, baby.
Blue sky. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, and. Brando, this came no surprise to me, having known you, but you made some very splendid sartorial choices at the Emmys. You were very British early on. this is a guy right out of a.
Did not know there are cameras on. To be fair,
so right. Just to be also completely honest, Jason told me he was going to dress as Batman. So
okay,
I do my penguin thing. You know, we're buddies again, but hung me out to dry.
I said Bruce Wayne. He heard Batman. For
this
the
is what I love about this, Brendan, is if you hadn't won, you'd look like such an ass. That's the guy. That was like when you went and tried it on, you brought a fake Emmy to see how it looked.
Then this was you late.
Now, Joe Kelly, this is the Brendan you met, right, in Amsterdam back in the day.
That was him. The pants are a little looser now, but that's basically him.
So we did all meet in the early 2000s in Amsterdam, working for a theater called Boom Chicago, and the conception of this idea obviously didn't start then. But, like, some of the seeds were planted, maybe just insofar as you guys were finding your way into soccer.
Oh, for sure. Well, I mean, yeah, Brendan, you know, fell in love with the sport over there. I mean, safe to say.
Well, yeah. We hadn't been in soccer at all, then moved to Amsterdam and caught the bug.
And then I talked to a bunch of people in the theater to give me 20 guilders so I could buy a PlayStation to play Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And then Brendan was like, oh, you should get FIFA 2000 as well. And then we would play that, and Brendan would basically explain to me the game as he's playing Arsenal and I was playing Manchester United, and just sort of break down the players. And it's exactly the way we ended up doing the commercial, like in 2013, like, you know, after me, dang near 12 years later. And the way that Beard and Ted would talk, you know, the way he explains the complications and histories of the game and how certain players are certain things, that absolutely started in the green room or the shiny at Boom Chicago.
And then you guys Joe, you guys were sort of sniffing around this idea for years, right? And sort of had it in the back pocket, waiting for the right time?
Well, I mean, first the NBC promos came up and they kind of broached the idea with Jason. And then it was kind of like, oh, we've got this. let's go to London and we can do this. And kind of freaked everyone out because we refused to hand in a script or like tell them that anything we were doing, and they were really, really upset. I mean, we found all this out after the fact.
We didn't know. We
didn't say anything at the time. We're very polite, very lovely people. And then when it was all done, they're like, that was great. Like, we were really freaked out.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God, we got this. We had a great 2 days in London once and saw a Tottenham game. It was great.
And we're literally inside our trailer and they're all aside going, what's going on there? Are they watching you? What's happening? We were playing Catan.
Yeah.
For hours.
Three-person sellers of Catan, which really moves. That's like Nightfall, you know?
We got to see a skill that I knew you had, Brendan, of hula hooping. In Coach Beard's big episode, obviously, Joe, you were aware that Brendan had this hula hooping talent. Were you worried that he had maybe, that it had degraded over the years? Were you pleased that he still had it?
No, you're around Brendan, you walk by his office, he's in there hula hooping, reading a newspaper. So, like, he's kept up with it, and I respect
always him. Warm. His hips are always warm. He's ready to go.
Did you discover any other hidden talents amongst your cast that you guys have exploited so far?
Billy, who plays the character Colin, is very skilled and very knowledgeable at all of Drake's oeuvre. Like, you could give him like two words and he'll know exactly what lyric you're doing, what song, and then he can just do it, you know, in rhythm, like in time, and he can do that at any point. And we learned this all because last year during the pandemic, the three of us and then a bunch of fellas that play on the game or play on the team on the show, all played FIFA together, played pro clubs. Before the show was even out, we created AFC Richmond. We played as our players. And, yeah, it came out in there that, oh, Billy can, you know, is like an encyclopedia for Drake songs.
He's a Drakeopedia. Really
he's a Drakeopedia.
So that worked its way on another show in a very expensive 15-second scene.
Well, let me tell you, buddy, what I wouldn't give for your music budget.
Tell me about it. Oh,
if Lord. Wally hums a line of something off camera, we got to shut down for a week. you obviously, you met, I think we've always, whenever we're together, we talk about the many joys and some few shortcomings of performing to the Dutch audiences we used to do. I've been very happy. Season 2, having a Dutch character, a Dutch player on the team, I thought that was a very nice tip of the cap to our years in Amsterdam.
Yeah, that was that. Write what you know.
To our very, very honest friend, Saskia Moss.
Yes.
Named after, yep. Who gave us all some hard truths at one time.
Yes, she is both the person that I thinks we're all the funniest, who has also given us the most stone-faced looks when we've tried doing comedy.
You gotta earn it. You gotta earn it. That's why you know it's real.
Yeah. Yep. Guys, so nice to see you. Congrats. I'm so happy you're working on season 3, and thanks for making time for us today.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having us.
All right. Love you guys. The season 2 finale of Ted Lasso premieres Friday on Apple TV Plus, and Jason Sudeikis will host SNL with musical guest Brandi Carlile October 23rd.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.